Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello, welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with Dustin Schutte. Dustin, you're coming off a huge weekend, aren't you?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. Played golf on Friday, played pretty well, hit the ball well, made some long putts for par. That's always a good sign. And then on Saturday, just hang out with some buddies and had a nice steak dinner. And it was a good bachelor party weekend.
Which, of course, means our buddy Dustin here will be getting married soon. So congratulations on that. Are we all set for the wedding?
I think so. Coming down to the fourth quarter here, so I think we're pretty much all set. It's just dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
In the fourth quarter, and no chance of it going into overtime, right?
Yeah, no. No.
All right. The important thing is you got out golfing before the weather got cold again. That was the important thing. Dustin, we're right in the middle of all kinds of spring sports activity. You and I, big baseball fans. I don't want to talk about baseball, though, for obvious reasons.
Have it something to do with an 11-game losing streak?
No, not at all, Dustin. Not at all. But we don't want to talk about it. We also have the NFL draft coming up this week, which you and I will talk about a bit. It's also smack in the middle of spring football season. A lot of spring football games going on, coming up. Penn State's is coming up this coming Saturday, Dustin. And it's not going to be a spring game. It's going to be a spring practice. I know I've said it before, Dustin. I hate that. Why can't we have a game?
I know you hate it. I do not. I don't mind it. But let me ask this. Is it Penn State? Is it going to be just a full-on practice where there'll be some scrimmage elements? Because the way they've done it at Purdue the last 2 years, it's been they've done individual and team and position drills, but then they also do breakout and they do some scrimmage. So there is some live game action for fans to kind of see. You know, what's the defense look like? What's the offense look like? So there is that element that at least you get a sample, but it's no longer like I don't think Purdue ever did a 60-minute game. I think it was always 10-minute quarters or something like that, or maybe it was 15 with a running clock.
Well, there's always seems to be that element, the running clock thing going on. I don't think we've gotten an actual detailed of what they're going to do. I'm sure they'll at least make an attempt at being somewhat entertaining, maybe some 7-on-7 drills, things like that, to at least, you know, throw the ball, catch the ball, make a quote-unquote first down. I think there needs to be at least some kind of element of entertainment, you know, to it, because just a straight practice can get rather boring. And, you know, I believe our listeners know my take on this. I'm actually a bit more forgiving of Penn State and trying not to just be, you know, Penn State bias here, but they're dealing with so many injuries, and I don't think any of them are very few are serious injuries that threaten, you know, fall practice or games. I think they're of the type, like, for example, Rocco Beck, starting quarterback, played with a bad shoulder, not his throwing shoulder, his left shoulder, during the season last year. Season ends, he gets surgery done to clear it up. He's been in practice doing drills, throwing the ball, but they're not going to put him in a position to get hit, even if it's an accidental hit, you know, wearing the red shirt. But the what I'll call the presumptive backup, or at least heir apparent, Alex Mansky, he's still in Iowa recovering from his surgery, you know, and then there's positions where it's like the top three tight ends are out or things like that, where the depth is entirely gone. So I kind of get it, but I'm still, here's what I don't understand, and perhaps you could answer it for me. I would think an opportunity to play in the stadium with the crowd, it would be gold for these coaches to get more information about their players, see how they react in the big stadium with fans there, with that kind of pressure. And instead of shortening this with the running clock or the shortened game, I would think they would want as many reps as possible in this kind of environment.
Yeah, I can understand that point of view. And I understand from the fans' perspective too, where if I'm going to spend, you know, if I'm going to travel, you know, Indiana is not hard to get around. So like people probably Indianapolis and North are all you're getting for, there's not people coming in from Illinois or Missouri or Ohio probably to watch the Purdue spring game. So it's probably not a huge deal for people to make the hour long drive and watch Purdue spring practice. And if they don't have a full game, then they don't have a full game. But Pennsylvania is a big state, and obviously football is a huge deal in Pennsylvania. So I can understand where people are coming in from 3, 4, 5 hours away, maybe further, and potentially even flying in. I mean, I can see where not having a game would be a little bit frustrating. It's like, what are you going and what are you watching? I don't know. I think for some schools and some universities, it probably does hold some sort of benefit to play a full spring game, or like there would be some benefits there. As you mentioned, playing in front of a good sized crowd for the first time, kind of getting the feel of what it would be like on a Saturday afternoon in September or October. I can tell you, I don't know that it matters at a place like Purdue, because you're basically playing in front of a high school crowd. And I like it's it, but there's, you know, there's just not a ton of intrigue around there. It's all basketball in West Lafayette for the most part. So I don't know. My guess though, Jim, is there's probably been enough research on some of this stuff now, because a few years ago, it was all because, well, kids can enter the transfer portal, and we don't want guys and other coaches and other teams, you know, scouting and tampering with our players because they see what they're able to do in a spring game. Now, I would guess that there's a level of, is it really worth risking the injury with so much at stake every single week? The fact that the season's gotten longer, and this is it, so I'm guessing there's some level of research, and they don't want to risk the injury, because this was pointed out to me last year during the Purdue-Ohio State game, and something I did not think about. They played each other in early November, if I remember correctly, and it was Purdue's 8th or 9th game of the season. Purdue was 2-7 at that point, or whatever the record was. And so for Purdue, it didn't matter, right? Like, they got 3 games left on the schedule. And we were talking about when would Ohio State rest players, And it was like, you got to remember, if they're wanting to win a national championship, they're only halfway through their season. So the season has gotten exponentially longer. You're no longer just playing one extra game. You're playing a potentially Big Ten championship game. You've got then what, potentially four games in the college football playoff to get to a national championship. So I think that's correct if I do my math right. So the season's a lot longer. You're not just preparing, you know, for one extra game. It's, you could be playing until January, December, January, then you've got spring practice. So I kind of understand why you may want to limit reps and not, because I think depth, my point is, I think even the depth now, because you're going to say, I want to see the 3rd string running back, I want to see the 4th string tackle. But in today's, you might need those guys at some point in the season, maybe not for like a long stretch, but you may need them for a game, or you may need them for a couple series. And so even those guys getting injured can be a problem at some level. You just don't know.
You know, I think it's paranoia by the coaches. Okay.
A college football coach paranoid, Jim?
Exactly. that's the path I'm going. They see, you know, one story, one out of over 100 teams, some player got scouted in a spring game and transferred somewhere. So we can't have that. And the injury question, you know, you're like saying, okay, these guys never get hurt in practice. You never have tackling in practice. You don't run routes in practice. I swear to God, these coaches, if a story comes out that a player somewhere at West Podunk State tripped and fell walking to class and tore an ACL, they would make sure nobody goes to class anymore because it's too dangerous. And, you know, it's coaching in fear when no matter what you do. And then I'd rather have these guys not tackling at all. So come October, some of these teams, it's like they've never tackled live in their career. And, you know, it's because they don't tackle in practice because it's too much of a risk of injury. And I think it's that paranoia, and they lose the benefit of it. Now, I do get some of it for upperclassmen who, you know, Rocco Beck, for example, has started and played so many downs in college. Right. This spring game's not going to benefit him. But I will go down that route, the second, third, fourth string players. You have 85 scholarship players or close to 100 now. Hey, even if you take 30 guys out of the equation, you still have way more than enough players to play and get some experience. And I kind of like to find out how that redshirt freshman left tackle, whether he could play or not, and what better way than have him on the field. And in the last minute I have left, I'm going to throw out an idea I've thrown out before. Penn State plays these three out-of-conference games against terrible teams. They win by 40 points when they don't play well. How about scheduling one of those teams in the spring? And, you know what? Don't play your juniors or seniors or any of your upperclassmen, but give all your first and second year players an opportunity to play. They get to hit someone wearing a different color uniform and get experience in the big stadium.
Yeah, no, I've agreed with that for a long time. I thought that would be a good, and you could do like the old high schools used to do a scrimmage, basically, where you'd play you didn't have to be a traditional game. You could do different elements where we're going to do, you know, one quarter of full scrimmage. We'll do another one where it's red zone work. And you could do stuff like that. But I do agree with you. I don't know what the hang up is. I mean, but like other teams in other sports, it's probably because it's a contact sport and injury is risk. But you see this baseball, softball will play other opponents in their fall balls. And then volleyball does the same thing during the spring season. You could do this. You could say one game, this will serve as you can either do the spring game or you can schedule an opponent. And I think that there would be a money-making opportunity there as well, I think.
Yeah, again, it doesn't matter who you're playing. If they're wearing a different color uniform, the fans will show up. I'll give you one last thought on that idea when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking about spring football, spring practice, and the games. And I've thrown at you, Dustin, the idea, you know, for Penn State, maybe think of these out-of-conference games, you know, playing a Villanova or a Delaware. And not only a game, if you want, bring that team in for a couple days, practice with somebody else for a couple days, like they do in the NFL. But how's this for a crazy idea? Find a team that's fairly close, but not in your conference, not someone you're going to play against. Maybe bring them in for a couple practices. But how about, like, maybe a bad example, but I'm thinking of Penn State, Pitt down the road, which they'd never work with, but maybe Temple. Now, it's a bad example because they're playing Temple this year, but how about bringing Temple in for a couple days of practice together? So again, you're hitting someone wearing a different color uniform, then have a game with just the young players from each team, kind of like a JV game, only first and second year players or whoever you want to put out there. Again, I think it would be good for those players, a tremendous experience. These are players who might never see the field come fall, but they're given a chance.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Here's the thing. We're going to go back to your coach paranoia, though, because as soon as that happens, there's going to be like, well, I don't want the other staff tampering with my players. So I think that one is less likely to happen. Maybe both of them are less likely to happen. I like the idea. Like, everybody else has figured out a way to do this to make it more productive. And especially now, you don't have to deal with a spring portal. So it's not like a guy's going to play in this game or, you know, go through these practices and immediately transfer out to that next program. So you'd have to go through a full season. He'd have to be unhappy and, you know, yada, yada, yada. But I do like those ideas because I think it would, you know, you're almost lessening the amount of hits your body is taking because you're not going, like, instead of your offensive line and defensive line hitting each other repeatedly, you're at least going up against somebody else. You're going to get some breaks in there. I think it makes sense, but I doubt we will see it.
I'm with you. Candidly, I would think it would be beneficial to do it in a lot of ways, even if you didn't have the game, just bring in another team to practice with for a couple of days. Because, you know, on offense, either way, both sides, we know the defense we're up against because we scrimmage with them every day, and obviously vice versa. The defense knows the offense. How about looking at different formations, looking at something different? And, I think that would be very beneficial. And whether you do it with a non-Power 4 team or even if you did it with a comparable team, I think just having that kind of practice would be beneficial to see different folks and different formations on the other side. But you're probably right. Again, that paranoia by coaches is so strong, so powerful, Dustin, I don't think any of them would ever do it.
No, I don't think so either. I feel like there's been a pitch to do, not maybe the practice portion of it before, but have a game against an FCS or a group of five team in the non-conference portion of the season. But I think that's just going to go away. And I mean, I don't know. I don't know what coaches value anymore. The thing that drives me nuts is this is something you talked about earlier, and this is not related to the spring game necessarily. The tackling in college football, it's so bad. And it's because they never tackle anymore. They always tackle with those tires or with those. And I understand you're not trying to get, you don't want to get hurt, but it's at some point you gotta be able to tackle at least in summer. Like, I'm not saying you got to go full steam ahead in November, but like during spring, you would like to see a little bit better of tackling form and things of that nature. I think that's part of the reason why scoring and offensive production has gotten so good in the last, decade or so.
Because the defense tackling has gotten so bad is what's actually happening. I agree. Hey, let's shift gears here to the next big story coming up this week. And it's draft time. It's NFL draft time. First of all, I've got to give a lot of credit to the NFL. Moving the draft to different cities every year, this has become such a huge event. It's going to be in Pittsburgh this year, and it's such a huge event. I got to admit it. I love it. I love the draft.
Do you? I hate it. I should. Okay, let me. That's a strong word. I don't hate it. I think it's unique, but I don't know if there's much of a purpose for it in terms of like the mass amount of television coverage. I'm like, I'll just look at what happened on my phone.
Well, I get it. And I do hate those interviews. Okay. Yeah. In the green room. What are you feeling right now? I just guaranteed myself a boatload of money. How do you think I feel? Mm-hmm. Or even worse is the guy who's sitting in the green room, not being picked. You were supposed to be a top 10 pick, and it's now the third round. How are you feeling? Yeah, I'm feeling great because I just lost out on a boatload of money. You know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
But I do like the drama of it. I do like watching the trades. I like when you're in the room with the teams and you could see a trades coming. You could see them. Yeah. I would like even more, you know, and you see this after the fact. There may be shows that show you the reaction or the conversation, you know. I need an extra fourth to do that and trade.
I think so. A couple of years ago, I was doing some NFL coverage, a very limited amount, just to help out somebody. And I will admit that, to your point, that is correct. When you were in it and it was like, okay, are they going to trade? Are they going to, who are they going to take at offensive tackle? You know, what do they feel like they can develop as a first round pick? And what do they feel like they can wait on? That stuff to me is very interesting. And so like when you're in it and you're preparing for the draft and you're kind of like watching it unfold, that part is very intriguing. I just don't need it to happen for 4 hours to get through 30 picks. That's my biggest gripe is it doesn't, I understand you got to, when you have, what do they get? Is it 5 minutes or 10 minutes on the clock? I don't remember. It's an ungodly amount of time.
Yes. It's too much time. That I will agree with. That they should shorten.
And I understand you're making phone calls, but at the same time, it's like, did you not have a backup plan and a backup? You had 4 months to kind of prepare for this moment, and you don't have multiple plans in place. I just feel like some of that stuff can get done a lot quicker than what it does. So, yeah, it is kind of a fun thing, especially when I was in it. Now, Jim, I'm just kind of like, especially now after the last 2 years, it's like, is a Purdue guy going to get drafted? Probably not, but I got to sit here and watch anyway, just to make sure, you know. So that part to me is a little bit more boring. But when I was doing some coverage for it, it was it was like a game of chess almost, was, and that made it more fun.
Yes, and I think that's the part to it that is intriguing to me. It's what am I willing? And I think it helps. I'm an Eagles fan as far as the NFL. And Howie Roseman, who some people think he gets too much credit. I don't think that's the case because he really plays it, the game, so well on draft day. It's He always does something. Move up, move back, always does something. And that's the part that's fascinating to me. I absolutely need a left tackle, and there's not going to be one available at pick 24. What am I going to do? Who am I going to jump ahead of? Who am I going to screw? Is it going to be the Cowboys? Because I know they want the same player as me. And I pick, you know, I steal pick 20 when they're picking 21st. So that's part of it. But I was looking at some of these mock drafts, and I admit, I do read all of them. I love it. What's fascinating to me, and I sent you a copy of one of the mock drafts. Ohio State, in the mock draft that I'm looking at, four players in the top 11 picks. And it doesn't even count, you know, probably their two best players, the best player in the country, Jeremiah Smith, the receiver, and the quarterback, Julian Sain, who probably would have been a top 10 pick. How could you have this many top 10 players and not win a national championship?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds you of, was it 2015? Ohio State won the national championship in 2014. 2015, they returned essentially the entire team and lost to Michigan State at home, and that basically cost them a chance at the national championship. And I think it's a very similar situation where you had all this top-end talent, and to me, it comes down to coaching. Like, I don't know how else you would blame it. In 2015, it was Urban Meyer not giving the ball to Ezekiel Elliott. And in this case, it was Ohio State, at least in that Big Ten championship game, getting too cute and trying to, instead of running it up the middle or what, you know, trying to get too cute, throwing passes from the goal line. You don't think you can get a half a yard on on third and goal. And, you know, I don't think there's any other excuse at that point. Like, when you have that much talent, and it's not like Indiana's got the number one overall pick in Fernando Mendoza. And just scrolling through here, Let's see. Do they have another guy who's another projected first round pick? I don't see one. It's a quick skim. No, the next one I see is Omar Cooper Jr. at 36 in the second round.
Yeah, I was going to say, and there's a couple places that have him going in the first round. Mm-hmm. You know, there is talent on this Indiana team, but that's also a thing here. Imagine 2 years ago, if I told you Indiana would have the number one pick in the draft and it's a quarterback.
I know. I don't remember the last time they had a first overall pick, or not a first overall pick, I'm sorry, first round pick. And maybe that was last year, but there was a time, 50 years, something like, it was a ridiculous amount of time, Jim, that they had even had a first round pick. And I mean, like, teams like Temple will luck into a first round pick every now and then, you know what I mean? So for yes, a major college football team to go that long, and I don't remember the drought it was, so I may be exaggerating there, but it was a significant amount of time that they went without a first round pick. So to have not only that, but a number one overall pick is pretty impressive.
It reminds me of this story, and this was a few years back. I don't know if you're familiar with it. In Pennsylvania, there's a lot of schools within the state where I live. There's a Bloomsburg University. Bloomsburg University had a draft pick, and Texas did not 1 year.
Oh, wow.
And people put a Bloom one, Texas nothing. All right, that's it for quarter number two. Lots more to go. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. We're talking all things college football. Right now, we're hitting on the draft. And Dustin, I asked you when we were wrapping up quarter number two about Fernando Mendoza and Indiana. Just imagining a couple years ago, thinking that Indiana would have the unanimous thought number one pick. Just without question, he's going to go first. Who would have thunk it? But it also leads me more to this question. Is it the environment that they're in, Indiana? He went from Cal to Indiana, which is now a winning team. How much of this is Kurt Cignetti?
Oh, boy. I would say a lot of it has to do with that. Because he found, like, so one of the things that I've gotten into, I don't know if argument is the correct word, but disagreement with people about, is that Kurt Cignetti develops quarterbacks. Well, not really. Because Fernando Mendoza was at Cal for what, two, three years. And the same thing with Curtis O'Rourke. Like, he was there for, or Curtis Rourke. I don't know why I want to make him Irish, Jim. He spent a majority of his time somewhere else, and then he thrived in it. So I don't know that he developed him, but he put him in a system that worked to their strengths and then also surrounded him with talent. Like, it helps when you have a good offensive line. It helps when you have good running backs and good wide receivers. So I do think that, you know, his improvement probably goes a lot to the credit of Kurt Cignetti, but then it's also, you know, you got a good offensive line. You've got a good wide receiver group. You got good running backs. And one of the things I'm really interested by, Jim, is sometimes these quarterbacks who have these outstanding careers in college does not translate to the NFL. Marcus Mariota is a perfect example. I think during his Heisman run, he threw four interceptions and like 50 some touchdowns. He was basically a back, which I would, if I could have a job, Jim, backup quarterback in the NFL would be the ideal position, because you stand on the clip, you stand on the sideline for 13 games. You maybe start two and you maybe get into another one at some point. And you make a lot of money to not get hurt, basically. So I don't know. I'm really interested to see how this stuff kind of pans out, because he was on a meteoric rise based on, you know, what he was able to accomplish, what his team was able to accomplish. But how much of that is Fernando Mendoza, and how much of that is I've got a really good – everybody around me is also really good, really experienced, and I've got a great coaching staff. Like, I think he's going to be good in the NFL, but you're also going to the the Raiders, which don't have the best history of producing, like, Pro Bowl-caliber talent.
Well, that's the thing, too, is the environment that you're in. And, again, Kurt Cignetti created this environment at Indiana. It created a winning environment. And no doubt Mendoza was a good quarterback getting there, but it's all the pieces. And maybe Cignetti's just really good at scouting quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, are you prepared for me to show my age? Are you prepared for that, Dustin?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember the name Jim Plunkett?
Yes.
Okay.
Did I watch him play? No.
I did. Okay. And I believe he was a Heisman Trophy winner, if not, you know, top couple, starring college quarterback, went to New England, and God, maybe back then it was the Boston Patriots for all I remember. That it was that long ago. Just, he was a failure in the NFL. He just kind of didn't make it, and he ended up with the Raiders. Winning a Super Bowl. And back then the Raiders were a good team. That shows you how far back I'm going. The Raiders were really good. And I wonder how much just getting a player to a winning environment and what that creates for them. And all of a sudden this guy, he's a Heisman Trophy winner. And how many other quarterbacks could Kurt Cignetti have brought into his program? And we would have been talking about that quarterback as a Heisman Trophy winner.
Oh, man. I see. That's a good question. I wish I could put a number on this. I feel like there's a lot, though. I legitimately, because I think the talent was so good around him. Like, you look at, and now quarterbacks, if you're just, to me, the way that the quarterback position has grown, I feel like there's a lot more capable quarterbacks out there than there are not. Like, I'll just give you, like, I think if you put Drew Aller in there, probably a Heisman Trophy winner, right? Would you agree with that?
Dustin, we've been doing this show together for too long now. My next question was going to be, and here's a loaded question, how do you think Drew Aller would perform? You think he would have won a Heisman Trophy at Indiana? And my question to you then, the follow-up question, I would not be surprised by that either, is does that tell you more about Penn State development or more about Kurt Cignetti and his development of quarterbacks?
Oh, you know what? I'm going to say it's a bigger knock against James Franklin and Penn State. The reason being is because it's not like in – If it was at Ohio State, it's a little bit different because you can say, okay, there's a clear talent, you know, differential between Ohio State and Penn State. That's not the case with, even though, you know, Indiana had the season they did and Penn State had the season they did. I think you would probably look at the recruits and probably maybe some of the transfers and say Penn State has a better roster, right?
And they do. And I think what demonstrated that was, if you recall, Indiana played Penn State this year at Beaver Stadium.
Yeah, right.
And essentially, and with the backup quarterback, Ethan Grunkmeyer, and Penn State played them toe-to-toe. In fact, it was a spectacular play for Indiana to win that game. In a lot of ways, Penn State outplayed them.
Yeah, it's funny that you said toe-to-toe because of they basically won on the toe.
Yes, yes, they did.
But I just think that, you know, we had lots of samples with Penn State where we felt like they were a quarterback away, but it just, like, the scheme never quite worked. They couldn't, like, Trace McSorley is the only one who really made that thing go. And I think that was because he was, I don't even think he was generational. He just worked so well. He could move outside the pocket. He was a gritty, tough type of player. And so to me, I would say, I would look at that and be like, Penn State had better talent and they couldn't I'm not even saying Drew Aller had to be Heisman Trophy caliber, but they couldn't get to 10 or 11 wins with that roster. That's to me, and that they had that so many times. They did get to 10 wins a lot, but there were so many times when you just look at the roster and be like, they can't quite get over the hump. Like, it just felt like they couldn't quite do it. So I think that that was a bigger knock against James Franklin and what he wasn't able to do there, even though I still think he was a really good coach for a majority of his time in State College.
Well, yes, he did a lot of very good things. However, there were flaws there. And you mentioned Drew Aller. And here's the thing. Do you know, until Drew Aller came into Penn State, the highest ranked quarterback that Penn State, that James Franklin had brought in, was Sean Clifford. Yep. And he was listed as like the 200th best player in his class. And that was the highest ranked high school player, our quarterback, that Penn State had brought in until Drew Aller, who obviously very highly regarded, which leads to the question, this is not a good quarterback class coming into the NFL right now.
Right.
It's not very good. Is someone going to fall in love with Drew Aller, an NFL GM?
What do you mean by fall in love with?
Well, where do you think Drew Aller is going to be drafted? What round?
Okay, I have no projection on this whatsoever. So I'm going in this with a clear head and no persuasion. To me, Drew Aller would be like a third or fourth round pick. Mm-hmm. Is that about where he's projected?
Yes, I think so. I've heard some people say, in fact, one of our colleagues, Andy Shea, said he's not draftable. He should be an undrafted free agent.
I can see that.
And you can see that based on the results. But I think what happens in the NFL, and forgive me for, again, going into my baseball analogy, if there's a high school or college pitcher in baseball who doesn't have a winning record, but he's got a big arm and he can throw 98. Someone's going to take him because we can teach him everything else. Drew Aller is the analogy is he can throw 98. He's got the huge fastball. Yeah. Now the question is, could someone teach him to throw it over the plate? Could someone teach him how to throw a breaking ball? Because there is arm talent there, incredible arm talent. Arm strength, and somebody's going to look at him and say what you essentially just said about if he were playing with Kurt Cignetti, he would be a Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah, I would say, so when you say fall in love, here's what I would say. I think if you're a team that you feel good about your quarterback situation, like your starting quarterback, and you have a pick in the third or fourth round and you say, we need a backup. We feel like Drew Aller's a guy who could come in, you know, over, you know, a time period, maybe 3 or 4 years, might be able to challenge for that starting job. I don't know if that's falling in love or wasting a draft pick. If you feel good about most of your other positions and you just want to take a guy and say, hey, we'll take a chance on this kid. We think the foundation is there. We just gotta, you know, hone in on the Kansas City Chiefs, I believe, did this. Was it last year they took a quarterback? And I don't remember who it is. This is how uninterested in the past the first two rounds of the draft I am. But I think they took a quarterback too. And basically everybody, you know, thinks it's Patrick Mahomes, but the what do you call that? His successor, or, you know, something to that effect. So I could see a team that feels really good about its starting quarterback maybe taking a chance and saying, hey, we need a backup. We think that this kid has the potential to fill that role. I don't know that anybody's going to say, we got to have Drew Aller, got to have him. I just think that if you feel good with your quarterback situation and maybe you need some depth there, maybe you take him in the third or fourth round, or maybe even a later round, but I don't think he's going to like get up to the first round by any stretch.
Well, I think a team that's in a position, exactly like you said, they're comfortable with their quarterback. I've heard, and I think this would be a great place for him to go, the Rams with Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a big, strong arm quarterback who's not mobile, you know, but it would that not be a good place for him to learn? That's what I'm rooting for him. All right, that's it for quarter three. More to talk about when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. We've been kind of hitting spring football. We've been hitting the draft. And we were talking about quarterbacks and, you know, Drew Aller and where he might go. I think we agree, Dustin, for him, a place where there's not going to be the pressure. He's not going to need to start right away. But yeah, to wrap a bow on this, I think it's also that get them into the right environment for quarterback. The unfortunate thing is the great quarterbacks, like you said, Mendoza, he's going to the Raiders, which is a bad team.
Right.
And there's going to be pressure to play him early. And it's not a, you know, a strategy for success. If you could get to a team, a much better team, I think you're, and especially if there's not the pressure to play right away. And I was talking to you between segments. I think the Eagles are a team that do that, bring in quarterbacks when a lot of people think you don't need a quarterback. Well, you could always replenish, and that's a way to do it.
Well, not only that, but then, you know, to that point, if let's say Drew Aller has, you know, he comes in for two games and plays really well, or, you know, even in preseason, he exceeds expectations, then you got a valuable trading piece, because if maybe he doesn't fit into your roster, you don't think he's what you need him to be because you're comfortable with that position. Hey, does another team need a backup? Does another team think a starter? And then they fall in love with that situation. So there's a lot of, like, the quarterback is so valuable that I wouldn't fault anybody for taking him, you know, third or fourth round or later. I don't think he's a first or second round pick, but if you're able to get him and then he exceeds, you know, if he exceeds expectations, great. Maybe you have your quarterback of the future or potentially a good backup, or you have a quality trading piece. If he doesn't, you didn't get him on an expensive contract.
Well, that's the Eagles did that with Tanner McGee. He's their backup. There's talk of him being traded. He's of some value because, just like you said, he looked really good in the preseason games. He's now becomes a trading chip. All right, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about the Big Ten and get away from the NFL a little bit, and what we're looking for in the coming season. And it's, well, first of all, I said I was just going to throw you some random questions about the Big Ten while I've got you. And let's start with this. Who's the number one conference in college football? Is it the Big Ten or the Southeast Conference?
Yeah, it's the Big Ten. They've won three straight national championships, and I think they've kicked the SEC's butt in bowl games head-to-head and maybe even the regular season the last couple seasons. So it's hard to argue against that.
I would also add to it, not only did they win three national championships, they did it with three different teams.
And the SEC hasn't even made the championship game in the last 3 years. You had Washington in 2023. 2024 was Notre Dame. These are the losers, of course. And then 2025, six, whatever year it is, was Miami. So they, not only have they not won it in 3 years, they haven't even made the championship game in since 22.
And if you count Washington now as part of the Big Ten, they had both teams in the conference championship game. here again, I'm just throwing random questions at you. Here are some of the new hires for this season. I think this might be it, but Bob Chesney to UCLA, Pat Fitzgerald to Michigan State, Matt Campbell to Penn State, Kyle Whittingham to Michigan. I actually feel like each one of those was a pretty good choice. Which yeah. one's the best?
Golly. Boy, this is a tough question. This is the toughest question, Jim. I'm just going to sit here and think for the rest of the show. I'm going to say
it makes for great radio.
It does, right? I think. See, Pat Fitzgerald to me is the best. Is the biggest wild card. That's the one I think could pay off the most, or also has the biggest possibility of like just being a complete disaster. So I'm not going to go with him. I feel like Kyle Whittingham might be the answer here. Now, here's the caveat to that. I think he's going to consistently have Michigan like 9 or 10 wins, but he was notorious at Utah for having really good teams that underachieved. But they were still basically James Franklin's Penn State team. Matt Campbell is another one, and the reason why I'm not picking Matt Campbell, so I think that Kyle Whittingham maybe has the lowest floor, if that makes sense. The reason I'm not picking Matt Campbell is because I've seen some coaches that will go and be very successful, and we've all seen this, at one school, and then they take that leap up to the next program. And even though Iowa State was in the Big 12 and competed at a high level, Penn State's a different animal. It's in the Big 10. It's at a high time. It's at a high level program where football is the number one thing. Like Iowa State football might be the number one thing at Iowa State, but 70% of the state is rooting for Iowa. Right. Yeah. So this is Penn State. It's all in. They are all in on Penn State. So how do you handle that environment? How do you coach with better recruits? How do you handle the recruiting situation? You know, that sort of thing. So I think that Matt Campbell could be the best of that bunch, but I think he also has the potential to, I want to see it first.
That, you know, so you landed on Kyle Whittingham.
That's my answer. So my thing with Kyle Whittingham is I think he has the lowest floor of that bunch. So that's how I'm going to judge that.
Or highest floor.
Highest floor. Highest floor. Yes. Yes.
What's interesting to me, and as I started the question with, I think all four of them were really good hires with the potential, mm-hmm. is I think a lot of this is going to be about the same conversation we had about quarterbacks. How supportive, how much help are you going to get around you? And where I'm headed with it, I really like Bob Chesney coming from James Madison. If you look at his history, he is making a big jump like you talked about. Mm-hmm. But it's not like he only won at James Madison. He won at lower levels.
Yeah.
And he adapted getting up to the James Madison. What will hold him back, I fear, is UCLA, an athletic program that's underwater, okay? Mm-hmm. So are they going to spend enough money? Are they going to have the resources to help him win? I think that's the biggest challenge there. And I suspect the same thing, although they say there's going to be more resources for Pat Fitzgerald at Michigan State than there had been. We hear that a lot, though.
We do. Here's what I don't understand. This makes no sense to me, Jim. And I shouldn't say makes no sense to me. I understand that there are donors out there that said, we'll give you more money if you fire so-and-so. Why would you pay somebody to not coach and then give the next guy more resources? That makes zero sense to me. Why wouldn't you say, we'll give – and I understand there's going to be people that like – Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State was a cultural nightmare from every yes. – so I understand where maybe after 2 years – I think he only got 2 years there, but I could see where after 2 years, you're just like, you know what? This just isn't a good fit. Ryan Walters at Purdue. It was a complete disaster. Like that program was a train wreck, not to use a train pun there, but there's certain situations where I understand, but to me, it's like, well, now we're going to invest more. Okay, well, why didn't you give the last coach that kind of investment? Like, what are, do you just like pissing away money? I probably can't say that on the radio, but do you like just throwing
money? You get away with it.
Just one time. So to me, like, he'll get more resources, he'll get more money. I just, when programs do that and they say that, I don't understand why it's not like, you know what, we'll give Jonathan Smith the extra $10 million we're going to give Pat Fitzgerald and just see how it goes so we don't have to pay this ridiculous buyout.
Well, I'll give you, I think, even a better example is Virginia Tech. And
yeah,
when the conversation was first had that, oh, they may bring in James Franklin, you know, Mike Villagrana, who works with us, said, I just can't picture that because they're not investing in the football program. They not, which James will demand. Well, guess mm-hmm. what? If you see, I used to have the numbers in front of me. They committed to a huge amount of money difference. And to me, the funny part to this is Brent Pry, who had been the head coach, he's coming back as the defensive coordinator. And he's right. just got to look around at the money being spent and say, what the heck? How come we couldn't spend that for me?
Right.
And now you are. If I had that kind of money, I could have won a lot more games. But, you know, just not happening. So, anyway, let's move on to my next Big Ten question. USC, Michigan, Penn State, Washington. Okay, got it? Washington, yep. USC, Michigan, Penn State. Which one's going to be the next team to compete for a national championship? I'm not saying has to win it, but actually be considered a contender for a national championship.
This coming season or in the future?
No, just in the future. Who's the first one? Which program is most likely that we'll see them in a Final Four or even a Final Two?
Oh, boy. I think Washington's out. I think USC is out. I don't know if Penn State's going to make the Final Four this year, but I think they have a legitimate chance because of the way their schedule plays out. I feel like this contradicts what my earlier answer was. I'll say Penn State because I do think, again, much like I think Kyle Whittingham has the highest floor, I think that Matt Campbell might have the highest ceiling. Because I think if he gets that thing running and is able to coach those 4- and 5-star kids that he couldn't get at Iowa State, that could be a really good program. So I'm going to say Penn State, and I do think that they have a legitimate chance to, even if they were as not as good as they were last year, but I think if they live up to the expectations that people think, they could easily win 10 games without, you know, not without being a very good football team, which sounds stupid, but you know what I mean.
I do, and they could win 10 games, but I think the big question I've been hearing a lot from fans is, gee, could he bring in 4- and 5-star guys, let alone them, because he never has. They've recruited really well now over the last couple of weeks. 3 weeks ago, they had 0 2027 commits. They now have 11 and several high-end guys, so that's going to have to be the last word, Dustin. As always, we go too fast here. Thank you. Thank all of you. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.